Right now, doctor's appointments, whether they take place at a free clinic or a specialist's office, can be stressful. We want to get the most out of the small amount of time we have with the physician, and we want to leave feeling better about our health concern. But it doesn't always work out that way. Dr. Danielle Ofri is a physician at Bellevue Hospital in New York City and an associate professor of medicine at the New York University School of Medicine. Her latest book is What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear, and her piece, A Doctor's Guide to a Good Appointment, was featured in the New York Times. Dr. Ofri, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be there.
Well, there's a lot that goes into a successful doctor's appointment, but it seems like communication sometimes falls short between the doctor and the patient. What can we do about that?
Well, for starters, there's the time on advice about having a list of questions you want to ask. But one of the things I suggest to patients is to be judicious about that list, because if you have 50 things on a list to discuss, then you'll guarantee it being superficial. So you really want to prioritize the two or three, maybe four things that are most important. But keep in mind that your doctor may also have things that are important as well that she would like to talk with you about.
When we're putting that list together, I think sometimes, I'll speak for myself here, sometimes I think, oh, there's this thing, I don't know if it's a big deal, I don't want to be a bother, I don't want to bring it up. And then as I'm on my way out of the doctor's office, I'll bring that thing up. Maybe I should bump that up on my list.
Well, if it's important enough to concern you, it should be top on the list. And you can let your doctor know, you know, hey, we've got a lot of things to talk about, but here are the three things I want to make sure we get to. And so if the visit ends and you haven't gotten to them, a gentle reminder is in order. You know, I had these two or three things, because you don't want to do it on your way out the door. Then you'll, again, not have enough time to really give it its due.
And for a doctor in this appointment, because you're offering advice both for the patient and the healthcare provider, how can the doctor make sure they're listening as well as they can to the patient and maybe getting at that question that the patient's having a hard time getting out?
Well, we know from research that doctors cut off patients within the first 8 to 10 seconds. And so my advice to doctors and nurse practitioners is to resist that urge to jump in with that, you know, battery of questions you want to ask. Let the patient talk. And most patients will say all they need to say in about a minute or less, and they'll come to an end. And then you make sure you haven't missed, you know, the next thing that's very important on their mind.
When is it appropriate for a patient to say, you know what, this is a really stressful thing for me. Maybe I need a friend or family member to come in with me, take some notes, make sure I don't miss important stuff?
Anytime. I mean, the patient owns the visit, and they can bring in anyone they want with them. Make sure the person, someone you're comfortable, you know, talking about, you know, personal issues, and they also can step out during the physical exam. But yes, have someone there. And it's often helpful to have someone else take notes so we don't forget what happened during the visit.
I want to move back a little earlier in the process, because you also write about choosing a doctor. And it seems like in a lot of cases, you have the health coverage you have. You don't have a lot of choice. But to the extent you can pick a doctor, how do you get started doing that?
It's always a tricky thing, because it's very difficult to compare quality of doctors. Most of these rating sites aren't ultimately that helpful. But I always say that you would like to find a doctor that someone feels, if someone can recommend someone they find particularly wise. And I distinguish being wise from being smart, because there are lots of smart doctors. But being wise is someone who takes the time to think about what they're recommending. So if you know anyone who's used a doctor, you can ask those questions. Who do you feel comfortable trusting? If you have a particular illness, or even especially a rarer thing, then you might want to find someone whose specialty is that, and that can use some internet research. But when you may have to just wait till you see the doctor and see if that's the person for you or not.
When is it appropriate, or when is a good idea to say, hey, this is a pretty significant treatment you're recommending, doc. I would like a second opinion. I'd like to get somebody to back that out, or maybe find another alternative.
Anytime. A second opinion is completely valid. I mean, not for the smallest, tiniest things like getting your flu shot, but obviously for any major decision, starting chemotherapy, dialysis, major treatment decisions certainly warrant a second opinion. So you should feel absolutely fine requesting a second opinion. Most insurance companies will cover that.
And when you write about this, when is it time to maybe break up with the doctor? If we just feel like we're not on the same page, they're not hearing me, I'm not hearing them, is that something somebody can do?
Yes, they can. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the book, What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear, is to drive home the point that the doctor-patient conversation is the single most important tool in the clinical encounter. And we often think about the blood tests and the MRIs and CAT scans as the important stuff, but actually it's the conversation. And I want both doctors and patients to give it its due. And so if you're not getting enough attention in the conversation, it's absolutely fine just to go for a different doctor. You can give the doctor the feedback if you feel comfortable, but you also can just go ahead and find another doctor. It's absolutely your right to do so.
Have you had situations where you got negative feedback from a patient or a patient wanted to move on from you? How does that feel as a doctor?
I have had that. You know, often you don't know. The patient leaves and never says anything. And, you know, when you have hundreds or thousands of patients, you may not notice. But in the few times I have, you know, it does feel a little bad. But once a patient did give me feedback, she came back a year later and told me how upset she was at our last visit. And I didn't really know why. And she finally told me that I had actually forgotten to do the physical exam. I don't know how or why. I must have been overwhelmed or overworked that day. But it was very uncomfortable to hear, but I so appreciate that, because if she hadn't come back, I would not have known. So if you can give your doctor feedback, that's helpful. I once actually changed pediatricians for my children, and I wrote the doctor a letter and I explained why we left. And I didn't feel so good about it, but I wanted them to know so they could actually improve for other patients.
If you're the patient in the office in that moment, the doctor didn't do the exam, or you feel like they're not hearing what you're saying, how do we advocate for ourselves?
Well, you can say, and it helps to be polite and not, you know, confrontational, you know, I really wanted to talk about X, or, you know, I think we never got to the physical exam. And if the doctor is a wise and comfortable doctor, say, oh, gosh, thank you so much for bringing that back up. And then that's maybe a doctor you want to keep. And if the doctor reacts angrily or insulted, then maybe it's a doctor you want to, you know, break up with.
Talking to Dr. Danielle Ofri, she's the author of What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear. She's giving us a step-by-step instruction on how to get the most out of our doctor's appointment, advice for both patients and providers here. Dr. Ofri, I'm probably like a lot of people. Before I go to the doctor's office, I'll start doing a little online research. For better and worse, could you talk about good ways and maybe not so good ways to do that pre-appointment online research?
Well, the internet, you know, has everything from wonderfully, you know, researched and detailed medical explanations to absolute snake oil. So I would say be careful. Doing some advanced research can be helpful, but often you can't tell which sites are valid and which aren't. So I recommend sticking with sites that either come from major medical centers or have authors who have qualifications and references that show them as you know, able to make these knowledgeable recommendations. Avoid places that have things that look too good to be true. I mean, anything that makes you lose weight in 2 days or cures cancer with one simple vegetable, that's false. You know, if it was that way, we would know about it and be prescribing it. So avoid things that make you either pay money or sign up or give you freebies. Stick with well-known sources. And the other thing is, a little research can be helpful, and too much can often be overwhelming. If you find yourself getting overly anxious, it's okay to close the computer and just wait to talk about it with your doctor.
Well, there's a built-in bias online where if there's a symptom and one of the causes is a minor virus that goes away in 3 days and the other is a horrible lethal disease, there's going to be a lot more web pages about the disease because it's worse and more significant, even if it's very rare. So that's an easy way to get panicked about something that may not be a big deal.
Right. And we call this medical student disease, right? As a medical student, whenever you read about a horrible disease, you suddenly start feeling those symptoms. So to recognize that the internet is not necessarily well-balanced, it's not necessarily referenced and researched and cross-referenced. So take it with a grain of salt and try to stick with, you know, things like WebMD or Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins that, you know, will have a more balanced and also referenced and also be fact-checked by others before they're published.
Now, we're in that appointment. It's coming to an end. How do we, reset ourselves and make sure, hey, I got out of this appointment what I came in to get?
So go back and look at your top three lists. Did we get to those? And, you know, what was the doctor's recommendation? Do you understand it? Do you understand what diagnoses the doctor is considering? What workup may be necessary? What treatments might be necessary? What are the risks and benefits? And so it's good to do a little, you know, review at the end. And the doctor may say, if they're, I think, smart, they'll say, you know, tell me what you understand about what we discussed today and ask you to sort of you know, feed it back. And if you're able to synthesize it, then you've gotten. And if you haven't, that's the point where the doctor should go back and explain it again.
And let's talk about patients listening to doctors a little bit now, because I know it'll happen. A patient goes in hoping to come out with antibiotics for themselves or their kids. And the doctor's trying to make the case that, no, this is a virus. Antibiotics aren't going to do a lick of good here. How do we make sure we are maybe dropping our own preconceptions and hearing what the doctors say?
Right. Feel free to ask questions. You know, why do you think antibiotics are not necessary here? You know, I heard X, Y, and Z, and ask the doctor to explain why. And the doctor should be able to give you a reasoned explanation as to why antibiotics, you know, are not appropriate and why they might be harmful. You know, people think, oh, well, you know, what's the harm? Just one more prescription, but there actually is a harm, and your doctor should be able to articulate that for you.
Do you think the medical profession is getting better at listening to patients and having good conversations?
Well, I think that the medical system is conspiring to make it harder. I mean, the more we press into the visit, I mean, doctors and nurses have much more to accomplish, and without having any extra time, and the electronic medical record in some ways makes it even harder because it forces the doctor to be typing into the computer instead of looking at the patient and listening. So I think it is a challenge. So we have to be even more mindful of saying, wait a second, I need to listen, you know, straight on to the patient, make sure I hear what they're saying. And then, you know, we do have to write some notes in the computer, but we have to resist the urge to be focused on the computer and not on our patients.
Dr. Ofri, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure.
That's Dr. Danielle Ofri, physician at Bellevue Hospital in New York City and associate professor of medicine at the New York University School of Medicine. She's the author of What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear. She's been helping us make the most out of our doctor's appointment.